भूरि द्रष्टुं न शक्नुमः हठोजसा महाभागा माननीयोऽसि देहिनां तेजसा ते विषाहेन भूरि द्रष्टुं न शक्नुमः हठोजसा महाभागा माननीयोऽसि देहिनां तेजसा ते विषाहेन भूरि द्रष्टुं न शक्नुमः अथोजसा महाभागा माननीयोऽसि देहिनां Tejasa, because of the effulgence, Te, your, Avisahena, unbearable, Bhuri, much, Drashtum, to see, Nashaknuma, we are not able, Hatha, diminished, Ojasa, with our faculties, Mahabhaga, O most opulent one, Mananiya, to be honored, Asi, you are, Dehinam, by embodied beings. Your unbearably brilliant effulgence overwhelms our strength, and thus we cannot fix our gaze upon you, O Exalted One. You are to be honored by all embodied beings. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus addressed by the King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled, and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds. The Supreme Lord said, my dear friend, I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus even I cannot count them. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. O King, the greatest sages enumerate my births and activities, which take place throughout the three phases of time, but never do they reach the end of them. Nonetheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons who were burdening the earth. Thus I descended in the Yadu dynasty in the home of Anakudundavi. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudev, people call me Vasudev. I have killed Kalanemi, reborn as Kamsa, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian has been burnt to ashes by your piercing glance. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Purport. It is apparent from this verse that Muchakunda was a devotee of the Supreme Lord. He had prayed for the Lord's association, and now Sri Krishna granted his fervent request. Om Agyanti Midandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Kuravani Pricharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Aschatya Deshatharine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Otidhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Shukadev Goswami here explains that after Muchakunda, with so many beautiful prayers, has glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his very surprised and astonished condition. He was sleeping for so many long, long years. Kaliyavana, a terrible, powerful asura, has just terribly kicked him. Muchakunda has woken up not knowing who this person is that has just kicked him, but spontaneously burns him to ashes by his glance. And then he sees the most beautiful, effulgent personality of Godhead standing before him, radiating the most joyful, wonderful light in his dark, dark cave. Muchakunda offers beautiful prayers to the Lord, and herein the Lord replies to those prayers by first introducing himself. He is explaining that you want to know who I am. I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, accepted thousands of names. Indeed, my births, my activities are unlimited. A person can count every particle of dust within this whole earth planet, but he can never finish counting my qualities, my activities, my names and my births. And then he explains how he took birth on the request of Lord Brahma in order to protect the religious principles and destroy the demons burdening the earth. By appearing in the Yadu dynasty as the son of Anakundundabi, and therefore his name is Vasudeva. And I have come to you because you have repeatedly prayed to me in the past. This is so important. Although the Lord is so great, he is so inconceivable in his greatness. He takes so seriously the sincere prayers of any living being at any time. What is the nature of the Jivatma? Constitutionally, it is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair when it is embodied through the various species of life within this material creation. It is Anu. It is such a minute atomic particle that it cannot be perceived by even the most delicate scientific instruments. And yet, Krishna is so great. As Mahavishnu, how great is Krishna? What type of size does he have? We read how when he exhales, all the countless universes emanate from the pores of his body. Imagine how big this personality is. This entire universe is smaller than any single pore from the body of Mahavishnu. This earth planet is so big for us, just for us to travel from Bombay to Calcutta. It takes so many long, long hours on trains. So fatigued. And that's just going across one little tiny country and one little tiny continent on this earth. Imagine the size of the entire earth. And what is the earth compared to the sun? The sun planet is millions upon millions of times larger in size than this earth. And the sun is only one little particle within this universe. The universe is immense. The scientists, they can shoot rockets and make satellites, but none of them have even begun to even fathom the length and breadth of this particular universe that we're living in. And yet, this entire universe is coming from one tiny little pore in the body of Mahavishnu. There is no human ability to even try to calculate the size of Mahavishnu. You cannot calculate in terms of miles or kilometers. There are billions upon billions upon billions upon trillions of universes. And they are all like tiny little grains of sand before the great Mahavishnu. And yet the Jivatma, in contrast, is in size 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. What is our significance compared to Mahavishnu? And Mahavishnu happens to be just a portion of a portion of a portion of a portion of an expansion of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. How great is Krishna? And how insignificant are we? Anu and Vibhu, he is unlimited, and we are utterly limited. He is completely free, and we are always subordinate to him. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo viditati kaman. He is the one supreme eternal, of whom every living entity is eternally subordinate to and depending upon, both in the material and spiritual realms. But Krishna's greatness is so wonderful, so intimate, and so personal that each jivatma And how many jivatmas are there? Just in this one little earth planet, how many jivatmas are there? Every blade of grass, every plant, every tree, every insect, every germ. What to speak of all the fish in the waters and all the birds in the sky and all the reptiles and all the animals and all the human beings? There are countless jivatmas in this little tiny earth planet. What to speak of all the jivatmas in the universe? Contrary to what some foolish scientists say, there is life in every planet in the universe. And this Earth is a tiny planet in comparison to others. How many jivatmas are there in the cosmic manifestation? It is impossible by human calculation even to begin to try to make a number so large. 1 million, 1 billion, 1 trillions. If you tried to write out the number of how many jivatmas there are in just this universe, the numbers would be so, you could take that piece of paper with the number and wrap it around the earth billions and trillions of times. And still, it would not be enough. What to speak of all the jivatmas in the cosmic manifestation? And this material cosmic manifestation is only a tiny particle in compared to the size of the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, in the Brahma Jyoti, there are infinite, unlimited jivatmas resting within the Brahma Jyoti, the Tathashta Shakti. And beyond the Brahma Jyoti, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets, and ultimately Goloka Vrindavan, where there are countless, countless, innumerably more in number jivatmas than are in this material creation. And Krishna is so inconceivably wonderful, powerful, all-pervading by nature, that he knows every desire and every prayer of every jivatma everywhere. As the Paramatma within this material creation, he expands himself to be just next to you. Every jivatma in this entire material creation, the Lord personally expands himself to stand right beside you in your heart. Whether you're in the body of a germ, an amoeba, a human being, or a demigod, the Paramatma is right beside you, and he hears your prayers. This is Krishna's glory. And any insignificant jivatma that even once sincerely prays to the Lord will never forget that. Not only will he not forget that, but he will be there to rescue you at the right time. Srila Prabhupada, he wrote a letter to one of our devotees. This particular devotee, he helped Srila Prabhupada so much. But then due to his previous conditionings, he fell away from his devotional practices and appeared to go deep down into the material world of illusion, engaging in various sinful activities and practically giving up his spiritual practices.
But during the time he was in the depths of his difficulties, Srila Prabhupada wrote to him. And he said, because you one time chanted the holy name of Krishna sincerely in Vrindavan, Krishna will never forget you. He will rescue you. He will save you. And sure enough, just before that devotee's death, Krishna came and rescued him and brought him back to devotional service. Once we pray to Krishna, he is so glorious that he will respond to that prayer when it is the right time. And here we find that in a previous birth, perhaps, Mutrakunda, in the past, he says, you repeatedly prayed to me. Now, here you are sleeping in complete unconsciousness in a dark, desolate, secluded cave. But do you think it's difficult for me to find you here? Nobody else knew where Mutrakunda was. He was hiding in a dark cave somewhere in a mountain that we do not even know. But Krishna found him, because he prayed to him sincerely in the past. Not only did he find him, but he made such a wonderful pastime all around this devotee just to wake him up and give him pure devotional service and reveal himself. So we should know that whatever darkness, whatever deep spiritual sleep we may fall into, because we're devotees, because we have approached Krishna with a sincere heart, we'll never be without him. Whatever we do, wherever we do it, Krishna is going to be there to bring us back to his lotus feet. Of this there is no doubt. Kaunteya prati jani hiname bhakta pranashyati. Krishna tells Arjuna, you declare it that my devotee will never perish. That means spiritually, he will never be forgotten by me. I will be there to pick him up. When, where, that I will decide. I will allow my devotee to misuse his independence if he so desires or she so desires. But not for long. I will come to bring light in the darkness of the cave of their hearts in due course of time. Why? Because that person has prayed to me. I will never forget or reject my devotee. And we find in the story of Gajendra, he was also a good devotee, but somehow or other, he was in a body of a very great kingly demigod. And the nature of material existence is that if you have a big position, even if you're a devotee, your tendency is you become proud. And what happens when you become proud? You commit offenses to others. You think you have a right to judge, to calculate other people's qualities, and you criticize. So he criticized a great sage. And because of that, he was cursed to become an elephant. And in the elephant body, because of his previous karma as such a great, powerful king, he wasn't an ordinary elephant. He was the king of elephants. And he got proud even in that body. He had so many nice children and a nice, not only one, but many beautiful elephant queens. You know, for an elephant, a female elephant is very beautiful. You may think You may not become disturbed when you see a female elephant. But factually, a male elephant does not become disturbed by seeing your wife either. It's all relative. For a human is beautiful. The cockroaches are not disturbed when they see even the most beautiful woman without her clothes on. Huh? But when they see a female cockroach, they go crazy with lust. That's why there's so many cockroaches. So it's relative. When you were in your cockroach body, you didn't care anything for human beings. In fact, they were big monsters to you, ugly, terrible monsters you were running away from. Anyways, Gajendra had these beautiful, wonderful, loving wives in elephant bodies and nice children. And he and every animal in the jungle was offering all the obeisances and respects to him. And so as long as he was in that condition, he just lived the life of an elephant. But one day, when he was bathing in the water of a pond of water in the Trikuta mountain, he was bit by a crocodile. And this crocodile wanted to eat him. He wouldn't let go of his leg. So Gajendra, with all of his might, was trying to get out. But he couldn't. Because in the water, a crocodile was very powerful. So they were fighting and fighting and fighting, and Gajendra was getting weaker, and the crocodile was getting stronger. And Gajendra's wives were crying, and his children were crying, and his friends were crying. They couldn't help him. All they could do is cry. It's a fact. At the time of death, all your loved ones, all they can do is cry. And you're thinking, I don't want you to cry. I want you to save me. But all they could do is cry. No one can save you. Only Krishna can save you, ultimately. So Gajendra, when he was in this condition, where he was about to die, and he saw that nobody else could help him, he remembered. He remembered his previous births, where he was a devotee, and he learned so many wonderful prayers to the Lord. And he prayed so much to the Lord. Krishna says in Gita, Sarvasya chaham hridisha nivishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha, that I am in everyone's heart. I am in the elephant's heart, the dog's heart, the chandala's heart, the brahman's heart, vijhavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini suni jaiva shvapake cha pandita samadarshana. I'm in everyone's heart. And from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Because of this offense to this sage, Krishna, he caused Gajendra to completely forget all of his previous religious activities. He even forgot his identity as a devotee. But Krishna, who orchestrates the whole creation just for his devotees' welfare, actually arranged for Gajendra to be in the grasps of this crocodile. And when Gajendra realized that I'm about to die and nobody else can save me, I'm in an illusion, then at that point, that opportune moment, Krishna gave him remembrance. That you're a devotee. Do you remember the wonderful prayers that you offered me? Here they are. Offer them again. See what happens. With complete faith, Gajendra offered his prayers. He, with his trunk, although in a position of terrible pain, about to die, with his trunk he plucked a beautiful lotus flower and offered it to the Lord of his heart and began to pray, "Krishna, I've been in such an illusion. I've wasted my life so terribly. Please save me. I'm your servant unconditionally. Now you do as you like with me. But please, let me never forget you." At that time, the Supreme Lord Narayan descended on his carrier Garuda. And then, with his Sudarshan Chakra, he destroyed the crocodile. Not only did he destroy the crocodile, but he reawakened Gajendra's original spiritual form and sent him back home, back to Godhead. Rivo! In a similar way, Mutrakunda, is being delivered by Krishna at this very moment. And through this story we can know that Krishna will never abandon his devotees. We may abandon Krishna, but he will never abandon us. He may for some time allow us to think that we've abandoned him, but he's just waiting. He's just waiting for the opportune moment to reclaim us as his devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said like this. He said, "Blessed is that devotee who never gives up the service to the lotus feet of his worshipable Lord. And blessed is that Lord who, when the devotee gives up his service, the Lord drags him back by the hair. Neha vikramana sosti pratyavayo nividyate svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahatopaya." Anything we've ever done in Krishna consciousness is never lost, and Krishna will never forget. So we are about to read the prayers of Mutrakunda. And what is his lamentation? His lamentation is, "Krishna, you are so merciful, so kind, but I am such a fool. I've wasted so much valuable time. But you have come. You have come to give me your mercy at my time of greatest need." When we talk about how great is God, this is just a little sample of his greatness. Although he is so inconceivably, unlimitedly wonderful and great in every respect, still, he gives so much attention to any little tiny soul like ourselves that even once sincerely chants his name or prays for his mercy. Why? In Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's enjoying with Sri Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka, Chitra, Tungavidya, Champatlata, Induleka, Sudevi, Rangadevi, and all of the Manjaris and all of the Gopis and all of the Gopas. Krishna's, these souls are eternally sold out to just giving him pleasure and ecstatic love. And in Vaikuntha, every associate, and there are unlimited associates in the various Vaikuntha planets, they have all completely surrendered their entire existence eternally only for Krishna's pleasure. And what is our position? We have, by our own free will, chosen to come to this world just to exploit Krishna's property, to reject him, to commit various sinful activities, to disobey and disregard his desires. Why would Krishna want to waste his time on such insignificant, fallen, rebellious, radical creatures like us? But how wonderful is Krishna, that he's always remaining right by the side of your soul, just waiting for the opportunity to bring you back home, back to Godhead, to enjoy personally with him forever. This is Krishna. And who are we, even knowing this, still we go on with our craziness? Still, I want to enjoy. Still, we make some other priority other than Krishna's service. The more we understand the nature of Krishna's love, the nature of Krishna's transcendental qualities, the more we want to surrender to him, the more we want to stop wasting our time, become his devotee, turn our life over to his loving service and the service of his servants, and pass our time simply chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there any questions?
Since Maharaj, you are saying that Krishna will not, so to say, abandon us if we have chanted one sincerely to Krishna. Now, if so happens, supposing in our spiritual life, in future, if we at all, because of our past material conditioning, if at all we forget Krishna and we try to go away from him, it is so that Krishna will rescue us one day or the other. But how to see to it that Krishna rescues us in this birth itself? He doesn't leave us, and we have to come once again into this birth, because we don't want to come once again in this world at all. So how to see to it that he takes us in this birth itself, he rescues us in this lifetime itself. So how to see that?
You have to give a good message to Krishna that you really don't want to take birth in this world again. And that means, if you really do not want to take birth in this world again, then you won't be trying to enjoy this world now. Huh? Your actions speak louder than your words. You're trying to enjoy this world like anything now, but you're saying, I don't want to take birth in this world again. To the degree you're trying to enjoy this world, to that degree, your chances are that you have to come back to complete your mission of material enjoyment. When you give up the desire for material enjoyment, and really, if you give up your desire for material enjoyment simply for the sake of release of suffering, then you can achieve mukti, liberation, in the spiritual sky. If you give up all your material enjoyments, aspire to give up all your material enjoyments, to engage in Krishna's loving service, then without a doubt you will attain the spiritual world, Vaikuntha or Goloka. So in our life, we should know that Krishna is going to reciprocate according to how we approach him. If you are sincerely endeavoring in devotional service, then you can know that Krishna is going to bring you back to him in matter of time. But to
our elevation to the spiritual world will be in the near future. Because if you are a Jnana-Mishra Bhakta or a Karma-Mishra Bhakta, if you have bhakti that is mixed with various material inclinations, then you have to come back to this world to complete the process of purification. But if you are seriously striving for pure devotional service, Krishna will give it to you. No doubt. He will give you what you want, but you have to strive for it. That is how you can see to it. Ultimately, Krishna will see to it. You just try to be a nice, humble devotee. Krishna will see to it. Don't you try to see to it. You just be a nice devotee. Krishna will take care. Haribo.
Maharaj, we know that Prabhupada said, unless one becomes disgusted with material life, can't really become Krishna conscious. And many devotees initially come to Krishna consciousness because they become disgusted with material attempts at material enjoyment. That becomes an impetus to take to the process of devotional service. Then we see that after some time of engaging in devotional service, the material energy is no longer working in a miserable way upon the devotee, because following the lifestyle of a devotee is certainly at least within the mode of goodness, if not transcendental, depending on the individual devotee, how it executes the process. So you see in the Hare Krishna movement, or probably within any spiritual society, especially our movement, you know, so many people have come to Krishna consciousness with a disgust, a distaste for material life, and then that some taste still remains, and eventually that desire disturbs them to the point that they cannot actually execute devotional services in a strict way any longer. And, you know, we read about the demigods who are devotees, and they also have these desires. So my question is, how to go from the point of being disgusted? It seems like that's not enough. Just to being disgusted with material life is not really enough. I mean, it may propel one into devotional service, but it's not really going to. So how does one go from the point of initially being disgusted to the next stage? Or to the final stage?
When you are disgusted, it is not that you do not have material desires. They are all still there, but they are frustrated. But you should know that frustration and fulfillment, success and failure, happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, they are all inseparable dualities within this material creation. Nothing is permanent. You may be disgusted now, but in due course of time, you will not be disgusted on the material plane. Because the modes of material nature are always changing, and it is by the various combinations of the three modes of material nature in relationship to our own karmic condition that these dualities are acting upon us and influencing our minds in various ways. So this disgust
for material enjoyment is simply a gift of God to awaken the desire to transcend the dualities of material nature. But we should know that that disgust will not last very long on a material level. We have to, in the time that we have, work very, very hard to transcend the dualities altogether.
Matrasparashastu konteya sitoshna shukadukada agamapayano nityastam sadikshasva bharata.
The non-permanent appearance of happiness, distress, they appear like the winter and summer seasons. They're always changing. One must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. The way a devotee tolerates is by always being fixed in devotional service. In other words, we have to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, one time he said, you want to perform tapasya? Tapasya means to read my books 3 hours every day. Harivo. Of course, if you're attending Srimad Bhagavatam class, attending evening lecture, and reading 1 hour a day, that's 3 hours. Because hearing classes and from his books and reading his books is equal to the same thing. But he wanted his devotees to hear his books 3 hours every day. He said it's essential. So that our intelligence is fixed on the purpose of life. Otherwise, our intelligence will be bewildered by the ever-changing dualities of material existence. And we will not be able to tolerate it. Sometimes everything's going wrong and it's disgusting and we're full of pain and failure. We have to go on with our devotional service because we understand with our intelligence the goal of life and what we must do to attain it. And sometimes the tides change. And everything's going our way. And all of a sudden we're in good health. And people are nice to us. And now we've learned how to make a lot of money. And actually now everything's very pleasurable. Now the whole world is at my feet to enjoy. How to tolerate that condition? No, first of all, it's not going to last forever. In due course of time, you'll be as disgusted as you were originally. But right now, it appears that I'm the enjoyer, and everything's here for my enjoyment. When I first became a brahmachari, no Mataji's liked me. Now, all of a sudden, Mataji's like me. They even want to marry me. And when I was a brahmachari, I really didn't know how to do anything. But now, I know how to do sankirtan, and I know how to deal with money. I can make millions of dollars. And when I first joined this movement, I was fried. But now, I'm stable, I'm intelligent, I'm mature. I could make it in this world. Arivo! So what will prevent you from becoming a gross sense enjoyer in that condition of life? Intelligence. Direction. That it's all an illusion. That all these promises for enjoyment are all going to just turn their face again into frustration and failure. It's just a matter of time. So we have to tolerate it. And how do we tolerate it? By continuing on in the path of devotion. You cannot go on by your material condition of disgust. Eventually you have to go on by a philosophical understanding of what is the truth. And by reading Prabhupada's books, sincerely, whatever idea you have that this world is a place of enjoyment, Prabhupada's going to cut it to shreds. Right? He's going to stomp and trample on your dreams at every page of his books. That's his mercy. And when you come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, we're also going to stomp and trample on all your dreams for material enjoyment. And we're praying that you continue to stomp and trample on all our dreams for material enjoyment. And this way, the association of devotees is we help each other to keep fixed in a proper vision that, yes, Maya is saying this, but Gurudev and Krishna are saying something else. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas when he was 24. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, how is such a beautiful golden personality, how is he going to maintain sannyas at such a young age? Only if he scrutinizingly understands Vedanta Sutra. Because Vedanta Sutra explains how this material world is an illusion. If you're really fixed in this understanding, whatever appears, you will not believe it. Because you have heard the truth. It's a fact. We must understand. We must hear. You see, on very, very advanced levels, we can just be hearing about Krishna's Leela in Vrindavan. That's very nice. But in the beginning levels, we should hear it. No doubt. But the majority of what we hear has to be the nature of the cruelties of Maya and the temporary condition of the sufferings of this world. Otherwise, if we're just, Prabhupada explained, the sahaja class of men and women, they're always talking about Radha Krishna's loving leelas. But because they're not cultivating a distaste for material life, they start thinking that this world is Vrindavan. Let us enjoy our leelas here. Why wait? This is not the proper process. We must cultivate this distaste for material sense gratification by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, by regularly associating with those in the renounced order of life, and by applying these principles to our life. Then we will continue on in the path of devotional service despite all temptations. We find that generally devotees who succumb to the material allurements are devotees who have become very negligent in their sadhana. They're not carefully studying Prabhupada's books. They're not carefully chanting their rounds every day. They're not carefully associating with saintly people in the renounced order. People who have that association and have that strictness of sadhana, they will be protected from these allurements. Any other questions? Rimo, thank you very much.